And now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Carolyn S. from La Mesa.
My name is Carolyn. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And I'm grateful that somebody asked me to come and suit up and show up today. I'm a for real alcoholic. And when I came to the program the first time in 1979, September 10th, I thought I might be just a little bit alcoholic. If my family would only act right, if my husband would mind his own business, if my mother would stay in her over at her house and leave me alone, I would be perfectly all right. And I was seeing a psychiatrist because I had tried to commit suicide. I think it was about 1974. I got drunk, and somebody gave me some really interesting pills, and ended up stabbing myself. I was aiming for my heart, and it ended up down here, my abdomen. And I ended up in the hospital, and I didn't call anybody. The neighbors, who I never spoke to, came upstairs and looked in the window and saw me laying there. And when I woke up 3 days later with my mom on one side and a psychiatrist on the other, and them asking me if I remembered anything, I said, no, I didn't remember a thing. And he said, you know, you were stabbed, and it appears that you did it yourself. And I didn't remember anything about it. I was a blackout drinker. So I'd start drinking, and then step over the magic line, and in case I know there's a lot of new people, you don't know what a blackout is. I do not lay down quietly and go to sleep. I like roam around, participating in my life and other people's lives, and when I come out of it, I'm usually surprised because I don't know the people I'm talking to. I have no idea how long I've been with them. And usually they knew my name, and I'm guessing theirs, like Sweetie Pie and Honey Bunch. And then I gotta figure out what city I'm in. And then I would tell myself, you're not going to do that again. And then it would happen all over again because I'd forget that what happened before. And I've already thought it through. It's not going to happen again. But it's something about me and drinking that I just plumb could never get enough. I'd always just get right there and then miss the point. And next thing you know, I'm off on another one of my marvelous adventures that I never remember anything about. You know, my mother used to drink too, and she went into a blackout and cursed out her sister and her brother-in-law, and then came out of the blackout like 10 minutes later and was wondering where they were. So she called my aunt and said, where did you guys go? And my aunt told her what happened. And of course, my mother didn't remember anything about it. So my mother quit drinking, period. I found out that people, when they go into blackouts, scares them. And some of them quit drinking. Me, I just merely thought it was, you know, that's what happened. My friends would say, girl, I don't have the faintest idea how I got home last night. And I don't know where my shoes are. Well, for me, that was like, so what? So I came in the program the first time in 1979. I sat there and I looked at those steps and I said, yeah, I can do those. I can do those steps. Yep, sure I can. Right there in the seat. And steps one, yeah, I might be a little alcoholic. Two and three, I knew meant go back and join church. Four, I didn't really need to do four. I see a psychiatrist, remember? He knew all my stuff. Five, okay. I told him the truth, sort of, sometimes. Six and seven, I had no character defects or shortcomings that we needed to get rid of. Eight and nine, if I did anything to harm you, you deserved it. 10, continued to take personal inventory. Well, I'm still seeing a psychiatrist. And 11 and 12, well, we know I could certainly tell you how to stay sober. So there you have it. And I got a year cake. Oh, I forgot to tell you. These little gray-haired white ladies, I ended up at this ladies' meeting, close ladies' meeting. And these little sweet little ladies who drink in the closet gave me to Chaney Allen. I don't know whether many of you know who Chaney Allen was. She's now dead. But she has a book that's still in the Library of Congress. It's called I'm Black and I'm Drunk. And she wrote another one called I'm Black and I'm Sober. And it was one of the first books that explained about blacks and alcoholic in alcoholism. Well, Chaney, they gave me to Chaney because Chaney loved to drink in bars. Chaney carried a knife. No, she carried a razor, excuse me. I carried the knife. And she was just a fun-loving person. Of course, by the time they gave me to Chaney, she was like 12 years sober, and I was brand spanking new. And not a real happy person. I got a year's token in 1980, and I told the whole group over at Old Pioneers Saturday night, I will never drink again, and thank you so much. And 3 months later, I was dead drunk. And I was off on another one of my interesting runs. Need to tell you about that. I was doing really well. Doing really well. I got a job working in a doctor's office, no less. And went back to school to get a degree. And I was still have four kids at home and four dogs and four motorcycles and four cars, and four bedroom house, swimming pool, and you know, the whole thing in my jiggy. And they would call me periodically, people in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'd say, we haven't seen you meeting in a long time. And I'd say, oh yeah, I'm fine. I'm just fine. I'm really busy, but I'm real fine. And they would say, well, hope you get back to a meeting soon. And I'd say, oh, yeah, right, okay. Well, no sooner as I get time, I will. And sometimes I'd go to a speaker's meeting, and that would be about it. So like I said, I got that one-year token, said I'll never drink again. 3 months later, I was at a Christmas party with doctors and nurses. Felt out of place, felt phony, felt like I just plumb did not fit. They were passing around little tiny glasses of champagne. I picked it up and drank it before it even registered that maybe you're an alcoholic. And I remember the thought, what it felt like going down, and then it did that little explosion thing, and I'm talking about enough enough champagne to wash your eye out. I am a for real alcoholic, okay? And it did it little explosion thingy, and I remember thinking, oh, I don't think I'm supposed to do that. And then I got nauseous, and I refused to throw up, and I went back over to my office, because this was at another doctor's office. And I went over to the office, and a few minutes later, you know, that craving hit. Told the girl that was working in the office, go back over and see if they got any more champagne. She came back and said, no, it was all gone. So I said, well, it's time for me to leave. And I stopped at the Green Cat Liquor Store. There are some people who know where the Green Cat Liquor Store is. It still is there, corner of Euclid and Imperial Avenue. And I got me a fifth of Canadian Club. And I went home, and I thought I just had just a little drink, you know, because my husband had left, you know, after 17 years. He retired from the Navy, and he split. Wonder why. And it was my belly button birthday, December 22nd. And I sat there and thought I was just quietly drinking and thinking. And what I found out about 2.5, 3 years later, that I went into a blackout, threatened to kill my daughters. They ended up tying me up. Yeah, they were teenagers by that time, and they wasn't going for me trying to kill them. And I was going to set fire to the house, and they tied me up and called my best friend to come over and talk me out of it, and which she did. So the next morning, I wake up, and everything is fine. So I'm thinking that I just sat there quietly in my room and had a couple of drinks and went to sleep. And my daughters never said a word about it. Because why? They are children of an alcoholic. And it doesn't matter what the elephant does in the middle of the room. They will clean it up and never say one word about what the elephant did the night before. And they never said a word about it. How I learned out about what happened that night was my girlfriend, after I got 2 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was over at her house once, and my daughter was there, and she asked me, do you remember about that night? I don't remember nothing about it. And she told me what happened, and my daughter was there and said, yeah, Mama, that's what happened. I am a for real alcoholic, a for real one. So I went out, like I said, I stayed out there for 9 months of interesting controlled drinking, if you believe that, experiencing some more of my blackouts, which I ended up, had this beautiful white and red outfit. Gorgeous outfit. Gorgeous. Red pants. And I had these heel boots, about that high, French heels. And I am so cute that it is just beyond measure. And I'm going to this beer bus over in Mission Valley at this hotel, at this apartment complex. It was across the street from Victoria Station, which was another bar in town. I know all bars. Okay. They had this beer bus, and I decided, you know, I really didn't like beer, but hey, free. So I'm drinking beer, and then pretty soon I come to, and I'm in L.A. the next day. I'm in Los Angeles. I ain't got no clothes on. I'm with some white guy. Except I didn't white out. Almost. But I'm with some white guy up there, right? And at the time, I didn't know I was in L.A. I didn't know where I was. Just with the white guy, having a white out. And I put my clothes back on, and here it's got blood stains all over the front. And the heel of my boot is gone. And I'm asking him, does he know what happened? And he said, no. And he don't have no cuts nowhere. And I'm looking at him, like, you know, where we meet up at. And he don't exactly know either. So we both surprised at who you wake up with, you know? And that's when I found out I was in L.A. because he said, you know, you got to go. And I said, go where? You know, where am I? He said, well, you're in L.A. and I got to go to work. And I said, well, where's my purse? He don't know that either. Me neither. So he takes me down to the L.A. bus station and drops me off with a boot with no heel and blood, dried blood all over the front of me. And he gives me enough money to catch the bus to come back to San Diego. Now, if you don't think that's humiliating. Now, I'm walking through the bus station pretending like I got two heels. And for ladies, whoever lost a heel on your shoe, you know what pretending that was. And got my ticket and came back to San Diego, and I had to call one of my other friends to come pick me up at the bus station. I believed in a pair and a spare, by the way, meaning that I always had more than one man somewhere, always. And I preferred to have one white one and one black one. because you wouldn't, when you're running with black people, you ain't going to the country and western bar, okay? And I happen to really like country and western music because I used to barrel race. And so I had a white one to go over there to the country and western bar, and then I had a black one to go down there to the Elks and the Turtle Inn and that other one down on 32nd and Market. I can't remember the name of that one right now. But you get my drift, ladies? You always have two. Different races really work well. Because if you got a personality that you like over here, but you also like over there, you know, you ain't never by yourself, baby girl. You know? And that was a song that they used to play when I was a little girl. Somebody used to play that song all the time when I was a little girl. It's called Keep a Man on Your Shelf and You Never Be By Yourself. And that was my concept. Through the 17 years of marriage, praise the Lord, it was the U.S. Navy, and they took him all over the United States, all over the world, and I'd be balling, and he'd be having fun wherever he was at, and we'd just have a ball. And when he come back, I'd be so tired of partying that I'd be, you know, ready to act right for a while. And then I'd stand there when the ship leaves and I'd wave and kiss, throw kisses, and Lord, it was on again, you know. Bless his heart, that poor man, he was so crazy by the time he divorced me. I was 2 years sober. About 2 years sober, and we were divorced now. And he was back east somewhere, and he called me and said, if you have put a hex on me, would you please take it off? Everything I do, it's just falling apart. I Well, by now, you know, I'm halfway working the steps, and there, and you don't do witchcraft in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I told him, I didn't put no hex on you. I don't do that no more. But I have had so much fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. I tell you God's truth. You know, when I came here the first time, I just thought y'all was blowing smoke. You know, like old guys like Bob over there, talking about always got this smile and bright eyes and happy look, and I just thought they were all blowing smoke. And when I came back to the program, September 24th, 1981. You notice September is the year, is the month when I get thoroughly tired, just have to give it up. So I came back September 24th, 1981, with an altered attitude, and that altered attitude meant that I am a for real alcoholic. I'm no play. I'm a for real one. Now I've proved that to myself beyond a shadow of a doubt. Now, if you can't talk to me about serenity and sobriety, we have no conversation whatsoever. And that idea of mine about keep a man on your shelf and you never be by yourself, that was one of them old baby elephant beliefs that I had to let go. Because Big Walter, who was my co-sponsor, told me that everything I thought was totally wrong, and I was to rethink it. If I put my stockings on right foot first, I was now to start putting them on left foot first, because everything I thought was wrong. And he had me going to two meetings every day and three on Saturday. And if there was a convention in town, I was at it. We used to have a Wednesday night meeting out of Belleville Park on Wednesdays. It was a central office meeting here. And that's when everybody would come to the meeting down there at the park. And they would have coffee and donuts back there, and the place was smoked so thick you had to like cut with a knife to get in there. And Walter made me get there early, and I'd have to stand at the door and say, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." And that meant I had to stick my hand out. Back then, downtown was the Gaslight District. Well, then it was back where the real winos was. Fifth Avenue was no place which you really wanted to be. And they had wine sores and dirty overcoats, and you know the thing in your mind that you think an alcoholic looks like, well, that's kind of like how they would look, dirty, stinky. And they would come in there, and I'd have to stick my hand out and say, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." Walter also had me washing ashtrays. He also had me making coffee. He also had me there early putting up chairs and taking chairs down. When I was 60 days sober, just before I got 60 days sober, he told me, "I want you to save your money, and this is going to be your roommate. This girl, I ain't never even met her or seen her before. This is going to be your roommate. We're going to the Las Vegas Roundup." 60 days sober. And I found out that I could party sober. Oh, my God. I danced and partied till 4 in the morning in Las Vegas, at the Las Vegas Roundup. They still have them, y'all, newcomers. They had two bands the first time I went. They had a big band up there to play big band jazz stuff. And downstairs, this other room, they had, you know, the latest music. And I party cold sober. I found out I could dance up a storm. Now, don't think because I got this gray hair and I done gained 50 pounds, give or take or two, that I still can't do it because I can do it. I go to AA dances right now. Let me hear they got a dance going on someplace and see who shows up. And I show up at Lemon Grove where we play our music, where I can dance any kind of way I want to. And then I go over to Southeast where they got these other kind of dances, like big ass. And it's stanky leg, do like that. Hey, I got it. I took a couple of my babies over there. I said, hey, we're going over here and learn how to do this. And I just had myself a ball. We had a party, games night, Lemon Grove. I guess it was week before last. And I won the bingo. Now, I know most of y'all saying, that girl is just going to stone square on me, you know. No, I never won bingo before. And I won bingo. Of course, I had one of my babies sitting next to me told me, oh, you got bingo. I said, really? She said, yeah, you got bingo. So I said, bingo. And I got a new ratchet set, too. And then I won the 50-50 raffle. I said, oh, this is just super cool. This is great. So I'm talking about being bored. I thought I was going to be bored beyond belief coming back. Oh, my God. Alcoholics Anonymous, please. Oh, my God has given me such a magnificent gift. Such a magnificent gift. I got divorced. I told you that. My first husband and I divorced after 17 years of marriage, which I get retirement based on 50%, 17 over 50%, in case you want to know what I'm getting. I appreciate that deeply. But I told God, look, I don't need nobody else in this, okay? I'm having a really good time, really good time, and I really don't need nobody in this. Because, you know, it's about 2 years sober, and I'm looking around, and I see all these coffee pot romances going on, you know, over there at the coffee pot, and I'm saying, I know I'm better. How come I ain't got nobody? What is wrong with me? Do you think it could be because I said, if you can't talk to me about serenity and sobriety, that you can't talk about nothing at all? Well, could be, but... but I'm looking around the room, and I'm saying, what's up with this? I don't see nobody I want to go have a little discussion with. And somebody asked me, don't you like swinging from the chandeliers anymore? Yeah, but I just ain't found nobody I want to swing from chandeliers with. So then one day, like I said, I told God, you know what? I don't need nobody in this, just me and you. Just me and you. Walter made me get a woman, and I had worked steps. I got a real woman sponsor. And the God that I serve, he places women in my life at the precise time I need them. Precise time. The first woman that Walter made me go get a woman sponsor was Susie, a little Irish lady who lived in Coronado. And she taught me spirituality. Not her God, but allowed me to get one that I could deal with on my own. And then after Susie got me through steps 4, 5, 6, and 7, then she had to go to Pasadena someplace. And I know better than allow myself to roam around without a sponsor. And I can't deal with no long-distance sponsor. I got to have somebody right here I can touch. So then God put another lady in my life named Dee. Dee had been in the program 15 years, went out 5 years, came back and had another 15 years. And she was That woman believed you had to write every single thing you thought of from morning till night. But I needed that. I really needed to take a real good look at what the bottom line was to all my problems. My bottom line might have been everything my mother and father and everybody else did. But the solution was left up to me. I could either stay stuck in what them bad people did to me, or I can live in the solution, which is today. And then Dee had to go back to Arizona, move back to Arizona. So then he placed Annie O'Neill. That's what she says. She calls her name just like that in my life. And she's been my sponsor for 23 years, I believe. 23 years. My sponsor. And better hurry up. So I want to get you up to about where I am now. 1995, my son died. He was 29 years old. He was also an alcoholic. And he died from an epileptic seizure suffered by from a motorcycle accident he had been in 86. And I don't know whether Steve T. has spoke here. No? Well, Steve is an old friend of mine, heathen. Oh, God, he, the man, was a heathen when we got sober together. And Steve was speaking at detox one time, and my son told me he wanted to get sober, and this time he's going to try and stuff. So I went down there with him to this meeting, and my friend Steve was speaking. I introduced him. That's it. I just said, Steve, this is Danny. Danny, this is Steve. That's it. And little did I know that they ended up being sponsee. And Steve took Danny through the steps, and Danny also accepted Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior. So don't let they put your drawers in a knot, okay? If you knew. Because we can all pick whatever higher power we choose. And that is what Danny did. August 1994. Danny died February 10th, 1995. Epileptic seizure. Says on the death certificate as a result of a motorcycle accident earlier. Now, when he was in the motorcycle accident, I was in New York. And they told me I had to get back if I wanted to see him right away. And I said, you know, the God I serve is over here and over there. All I got to do is ask. So what I asked for was I wanted him to know serenity and sobriety, and I wanted him to know Jesus Christ just like me. And I believe that that is why he did not die in 86, because I asked. And when I got back here in 1986 from New York, he was sitting up in bed with his head bandaged up, fussing because he couldn't smoke a cigarette because of oxygen. And I said, just tell me you'll never drink again. Even if it's a lie, just say it. He said, no, Mom, I can't tell you that, but I'll tell you I won't ride no motorcycle no more. And like I said, in 1995, he died. Well, in 95, after his death, I was also diagnosed with hepatitis C. So if you haven't been checked, I would suggest you go get a liver panel test to see, because it is a sneaky, quiet disease. At the time, all they had was interferon, and my body couldn't stand that. I was on it for 4 months, and then my body couldn't deal with it, so they took me off and said, well, we'll just have to see what happens later. Okay, so I go skipping off down the road. In 2001, I'm diagnosed with breast cancer in the right breast. the day before the surgery, I went to Lemon Grove, and I said, I just came over here so y'all could see what a beautiful matching pair they used to be. Because tomorrow they're going to be slightly altered. And of course, we laughed about it. Then in 2000, so I went through chemo and radiation, so the hair I have now is not the hair that I had in 2003. I was bald-headed and looked a little bit different. Then I think it was 2005 or something, hepatitis C came back with a vengeance. And so I was back on this interferon and ribavirin, and so my hair fell out again. So I'm bald-headed for the second time. And then, after I got that 48 weeks, then I went on, then my back went. I had to have spinal fusion surgery. But I came out the other side. I kept telling God, Lord, if you just give my health back, I tell you I'm going to dance every time I hear music. And I am going to praise you every chance I get. 2007, I believe, I was diagnosed with breast cancer on this side. So went into surgery again. Some more chemo, not chemo, radiation. Yeah, they lit me up this time. You know, you just get baked a little bit. Came out the other side. 2008 was not one of my stellar years. Another one of my children died, a daughter, Krita. She was 40 years old. 40 years old. She died in Atlanta, Georgia. And when I came back, one of my sons in the program, I got a lot of them, so I got a lot of sons in the program. None I gave birth to, but ones that God gave me in the program. And he had a crush on my daughter, Krita, from the ninth grade. So I had to tell him in person that Krita had died. And he said, I know you're really mad at God now. I know you're really mad at God because that's the second child that God has taken from you. And I said, no, baby, you don't understand. I trust God even more, and I praise him even more, and I love him even more. Don't you understand? I would have never had a relationship with my kids if I hadn't gotten sober. I know my daughter had three children, and I know them all, and they know me. I've got 22 grandchildren and one great-grand, my oldest grandchild is 27, and she's never seen her grandmother drunk. They've never even seen me smoke. They call grandmama, and they say, Grandmama, would you pray for me for this or for that or whatever they're trying to do? That is a big difference from the woman I was in 1980 and on back before I came back to program. Big difference. He was so surprised, my baby, Andy, when I told him that I love God even more and trust him even more. I said, baby, that's what I've been trying to teach you. That's what this program has taught me. That's what this program has given me. I've said it so many times. This is like, I want you to use your imagination, group. We're in a giant buffet. You ever been to a buffet? Please nod your head. Yeah, you've been to one. Okay. This is a giant buffet. I mean, food is just laid out, and us old-timers, we're sitting on the side, man. We're just kicking back and laughing and having a grand old time. And newcomers come in, and we say, baby, grab a chair and pull it up here and enjoy yourself. And you go and pick up a cracker and a piece of cheese, and you wander to the other side of the buffet table, and you stand there nibbling on your little cracker and cheese, and you think you got it, and that's what you say. Oh, I got it. But you're starving. You're starving, and you're standing up there talking about, you know, I got it. This piece of cracker and this little cheese. I got it. And then we see you wandering around to the other side of the table, and you pick up an olive, one olive, and you're starving. And I say, baby, come on, sit down here and let's have fun. And you say, I got it. I got it. And the next thing, you wander on out the door, still starving. Still starving. So I'm asking you, loves, God has prepared this magnificent thing called life. It's your life, sweetheart. It's your life. And he's prepared it just for you. He made you, and he knows exactly how you're supposed to be. Not the one that you created in your mind, you know? It always amazes me when women get to the sixth and seventh step, and they say, but if I do that, then what happens to me? How about you aren't the real you anyway? that you're just pretending. You're pretending. And he wants you to be the one that he created. And the way you get to that is you have a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. That's it. It ain't difficult. And if I tell you about all the stuff that I've experienced, about the great joys that I've experienced, we would be here all night. Try this one on. April 30th, Carolyn gets on a cruise ship that is coming to San Diego, and she's going on a 14-day cruise to Alaska, which is not the first one. In December, I was in Yokosuka, Japan, visiting one of my kids who lives in Japan. Kids love me. Girl calls me from Japan like she's next door all the time. All my kids. It's just astonishing. It did not happen overnight, darlings. It didn't happen overnight. But when you're walking the path that God has laid out for you, everything goes into place. Everything. So God's put this gift at your feet, darlings. Pick it up and open it and use it, okay? Thanks for calling me. Thanks for